I'm David Schifrin, and I am the one.
I am the One, Entrepreneur Edition, a show that explores the journeys of business owners who decided to be the one to make life better for the people they serve. I'm your host, Sonia Thompson, and today's guest is David Schifrin. David is a founder of Filament Life Science Communications, where he helps early stage life sciences companies communicate effectively to their ideal customers. David also hosts a podcast, Science Writing Radio, where he teaches scientists how to get better at telling the story of their work. We can learn a ton from David, in particular his approach to transforming himself from a lab scientist into an entrepreneur. But before we dive into the interview, I want to let you know that this episode is brought to you by Try Business School. Get the information you need to build the business of your dreams, step by step. Visit trybizschool.com, that's trybizschool.com, and get started with your free e-course, the four people you need to build a successful business. Now, let's get to it. Here's David.
Why, hello, David. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm great, Sonia. It is so good to be here. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. All right, let's go ahead and dive right in. Tell me about Filament Life Sciences Communications.
Yeah, so Filament is a company that I started about a year ago, coming out of graduate school, and it's built to work with early stage life science companies. And what I do is come in and help with the messaging, the communications, kind of figure out who people are trying to connect with and what those people need and how I can help those companies at these, like I said, really early stages, get their message across. So, you know, how could they best help their prospects while also coming in and getting the material that they need, which often is funding, exposure in the marketplace, things like that. So lots of content creation, some strategy, as we were talking about before the call started, and just, you know, helping people really build a personality around their science.
That's really cool. I imagine, well, maybe this is a really bad stereotype. The scientists that you're working with, they're scientists, so they're not marketers. So two very different, very distinct skill sets. So I'm guessing that they welcome your help.
Yeah, that you have, you got to the point quickly. Yeah. So, and you know, I'm a scientist too. And so it's kind of an interesting situation, because I've brought in kind of the marketing side of things, but yeah, there's this really interesting thing in science. We're very focused on our data, and we want to assume that the numbers, the statistics, all the p-values will speak for themselves, and if the error bars are tight enough, everything's good. But the reality is, while you have to have good data, it's not enough. And so, you know, all the cliches in business these days about storytelling really do apply, because you have to make, first of all, you have to make that data accessible, but then you also have to give it relevance, you have to give it meaning in kind of a bigger context. And so, yeah, scientists, you know, some of them see that need for that extra bit of help. Others don't. I mean, the problem I'm trying to solve is also one of the reasons why it is a problem, is because a lot of people say, look, let me just take this information and put it out there, and whatever happens, happens. It'll be good enough. So
what made you decide that you were going to be the one to solve it? Because like you said, you're a scientist. And is there, well, first, before you answer that question, I guess, let me back up and ask one earlier question. Do most scientists understand that they have this problem and that they need to present their data in a different kind of way for it to be received and digested from people who maybe aren't part of their community?
Yeah, that's a really good question. The short answer is no. But the longer answer is that it's getting better. You still have, and frankly, some of this is generational. And, you know, I've seen well-established scientists who are just unbelievable speakers. And so it's obviously there's no hard and fast rule. But I think my generation of scientists coming out of the lab are a little bit more aware. And I think some of that is just because we've been plugged in, we've been connected our whole lives. And so we're used to kind of like having, you know, both taking in and putting out information constantly. So we're just more used to that. But no, it's not the case that everybody's like, oh, you know, we need to communicate more effectively. So that's definitely a barrier for me and other people like me who are trying to do this sort of thing.
Got it. So what made you decide that you were going to be the one to sort of try to break these barriers and help these scientists tell their story?
Yeah. So for me, it came out of a lot of frustration when I was in the lab. I was really blessed to have a mentor who was an unbelievable, I mean, he was a great mentor, first of all, but he's also just an unbelievable communicator. He could take science and present it to his son's like grade school class or go to a national conference and give a talk. And it would be almost the same information, but just presented differently. And so I learned unbelievable things from him. But then the next person would get up at the podium at these conferences and it was a train wreck all too often. And so I saw this need. I started getting excited about communications. I like to talk. I like to run my mouth. And so I thought there was going to be, you know, some good opportunities in kind of helping scientists communicate more effectively. On the business side, going through grad school, I saw some friends spinning off and starting companies and the life science sector in Nashville. We're really big in healthcare here in town. Life sciences is much smaller, but it's starting to grow. And so I kind of got plugged into that community and got excited about, I just thought startups were really cool. So when it came time to leave the lab, you know, I just sort of picked those two things and mashed them together and figured I'd see what would happen.
That's awesome. So it's a really cool story in terms of what your evolution was. Now, what was your life circumstances? You started this a year ago. Was it that you were leaving school and you decided before you go and try and work for somebody else, you're going to take this on? Or was there different circumstances going on that led you to this path, to starting this business?
Yeah, so the I guess what happened is there's a very traditional pathway in the sciences. You know, you get a bachelor's, maybe you work as a lab tech for a year or two, you go to grad school, you get your degree, you do a postdoc, then you apply for fellowships, get a little bit of money, and transition and become a faculty member. The problem is only like 7 to 10% of us will ever become faculty.
Oh, wow.
And
that's
so
low.
Yeah, it's painfully low. And so I realized you know, somewhere in there that wasn't the route I was going to take. And so I decided that I was just going to go cold turkey rather than doing a postdoc. And so when it came time to leave lab, I had a couple of freelance projects from people in town. They needed some extra help. I took a little bit of time just to decompress. And while I was doing that over the first couple of months out of lab, so this was 2014, the beginning of 2014, first couple months there, you know, looked around and talked to some people and interviewed for some jobs and realized that there wasn't a great fit. And so, I said, I'm going to do my own thing. And it's funny because so my wife and I are like chronically behind on our TV. You know, we watch things like 5 years after they're there. So we're just now working our way through Mad Men. We just finished season 3. But there was an interesting episode that had I been watching Mad Men at the time, would have been amazing. But Don Draper says, pick the job and become the person who does it. And so in retrospect, that's essentially what I did. It's just like, you know what? Screw it. We're going to do this. I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to make it work.
I love that. Pick the job and become the person who does it. I mean, that's what most of us have to do anyway. I think a lot of times a similar sort of saying that sort of goes along the same lines, maybe not quite as eloquent, is fake it until you make it. But it's the same premise, really, of just make yourself into that person who you're trying to inspire to be. So very cool.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
All right. What was your biggest fear? So, I mean, going through school and thinking that you're going to take one path all the way through and then deciding to do something that's sort of related, but honestly, it's completely different. It's a different, totally different skill set. Did you have a fear associated with that, or were your fears about starting your business something completely different?
Yeah, no, what didn't I have a fear about? For me, the biggest fear was being taken seriously because, as you just said, I'm going into something totally different. And in, you know, we talk about transferable skills a lot. And so for me, my skills were growing cells in a dish and moving little tiny minuscule amounts of a clear liquid from one tube to a smaller tube. And here I am, you know, turning myself into a communications consultant. And so that was really scary, just thinking about trying to find clients and getting them to take me seriously. And you know, the fear of failure and that it would all fall apart was definitely, that was definitely really big. But again, my mentor was fantastic. You know, he always said, look, I'm a PI, I'm a principal investigator, I run a lab, so that's what I know, that's what I love, I think everybody should do it, but not everybody's going to do it. So whatever I can do to help you prepare, and he, you know, kind of encouraged me to just go and try stuff, and my wife and my family and friends say, hey, you know, jump on it and see how it goes. So that was helpful. But yeah, it was terrifying because there was this big, like, you know, I don't have an MBA. I haven't taken marketing classes in this like long extended format. And so kind of figuring things out.
Now, what have you been doing to supplement your knowledge, your business knowledge and your marketing knowledge so that you can run your business effectively?
Yeah, it's reading and talking to people and absorbing everything I possibly can. You know, looking for material online. I mean, there's always the option of going and sitting in on classes back at Vanderbilt or something like that. But there's so much good material now that, and not to downplay it. Certainly, taking classes and things is great, but it's just, there's so much great material from people who know what they're doing that's really practical. And talking to people in the field, I've been amazed at how friendly this field of life science marketing is. You know, people are always willing to talk and just bounce ideas around. So it's been good.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of higher education. But what I've learned, especially in the whole entrepreneurship world, is my MBA was great about giving me the theory, but you can't build a business on theory. You need to have like the actual practical
yeah.
hands-on skills. So definitely yeah. you're taking a cheaper approach.
Yeah. I mean, I bought a guy coffee last week and, you know, we got to talking and he just started saying, okay, do this, don't do this. Look at your numbers this way. When you pay yourself, do it this way. Think about these percentages. And like in an hour, I got so much more information than I would have because he's done it from the smallest startup to, you know, working with established companies. Like I'll take that any day.
Yeah, no, that's really helpful. And that's a good tip. If you can buy somebody coffee, it's much cheaper than a course at a university.
Yeah.
And you get a lot of great information and no tests.
Right.
All right. So you've been doing this a little bit over a year now. Knowing what you know now, because I'm sure your learning curve has been super steep. What advice would you give to your younger self at the point in which you were starting your business?
That's such a good question as I stare off into the distance here past the computer. I think the biggest things I would say are start sooner, take more responsibility, and be more proactive. I got started, you know, before I left lab, but I always had this fear that, you know, I need to be in lab doing experiments and I shouldn't take the time to meet these people or go to this event or whatever it is. And I had to do a little bit of scrambling when it came, you know, when I started realizing those last couple of years what I was planning on doing. So just get started as soon as possible, be proactive, go out, talk to people. You know, buy people coffee, even though you're a grad student, you have no money, buy people coffee anyway, follow up with them, check in, you know, again, just be proactive and do stuff and try stuff. And I think that's where I would have gone.
Very good advice. You'll just be hungry enough to go get what you need. How are you different now as an entrepreneur than you were before you started, whenever you were in the lab?
I think actually what I just described is a big part of it. I am much more comfortable harassing people nicely and following up and getting out there. When I first started, I was the type of person who would go and meet people, but sort of let people offer to introduce me, or you know, kind of wait for people to feed me. And I'm certainly not where I want to be, but I've gotten much better at actually like stepping in front of people and saying, you know, here's who I am, here's what I do, tell me about yourself, and kind of flipping that script a little bit. So it's been good for my confidence, and it's been good for my business development. It's just being more solid.
Awesome. All right. So what has been, failure has generally a part of the entrepreneur life. Can you tell me about a failure that you experienced and what you learned from it?
Yes. The failure question. I actually really like this question a lot, because in science, so there's this, kind of this joke. I don't know if it's really a joke. We tell ourselves scientists. I don't know if it's funny, but like the only two careers where you can get away with a batting average of less than 300 is science and baseball. And in science, you know, if you have a batting average of 200, you're in great shape. Like 8 or 9 out of 10 experiments fail. So we do this just constantly. And I could, you know, we could spend hours me telling you about all the different mistakes and failures that I had in lab. But the cool thing about that is it got me very comfortable with things not working. So that's been great. So I really do, this is such a cliche, but I really do see failure as an unbelievable opportunity. And you know, everybody says that, but it really is true. So as far as like specific failures, I think kind of the overarching thing that I would say is clarity, not being clear enough with my objectives and what I'm trying to get done. And so that's played out in different ways. Early on, I think I just, and this was okay because I was still figuring things out, but I didn't have as much clarity on what I was trying to offer to people. And so, that was big. I think it also came to play a little bit more recently with a client, and it kind of got into this mission creep sort of thing where I was working as a consultant, but also became a de facto part-time employee just with the types of work that I was doing. And it was great. But then I started to see some cracks, and some things were a little bit off. I'm sorry about the window. It's a partly cloudy day here in Nashville, and so the sun's all over the place. And so when things started to go south, I saw it and started to get things in line in case things totally fell apart, which, and that project ended. So what that meant was I was kind of left without, I was left with a little bit of a gap, and it hurt. But what I realized is I hadn't been clear on who I was and what I was trying to do. And I'd let myself kind of get pulled along in a different direction than I had initially planned on. And so since then, I've been very intentional about saying, you know, I'm a consultant, you can hire me to do these defined projects. So I don't know if that's a failure, but that's...
Especially based upon the way you described failure, it's a learning opportunity. So anytime, I guess, something doesn't quite work out the way you intended it, and you're able to learn something from it and kind of use it to grow, win.
Yeah.
So what has been your proudest moment so far?
Man, I think kind of like the failures. It's the little wins for me. I live off of these like little day-to-day exciting things. Getting my first batch of business cards and saying, holy crap, I'm actually doing this. And, every time I get a new project, a new client, it's really exciting for me. I think maybe the most excited I've been was earlier this year. I had an informational meeting. Again, was just trying to get connected with somebody at a company here in town, just to meet. And he started bouncing ideas around and asked for my input on something. He said, you know, we're trying to figure out this problem. If you have any ideas, let me know. And so a couple days later, I had an idea and I shot him an email, and he wrote back and said, this is awesome. Like, I love it. Nobody's doing this. Let's talk more. And it's a long process because, you know, working with established companies takes a while to get things rolling. And I don't even know if that's necessarily going to turn into an actual business win for me. But to have somebody come back and say, this is a great idea, thank you for helping us look at this problem in a completely different way, was incredible. So that's like, to me, that's success, and the business part of it will come.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations. Sounds like things are shaping up, especially now that you have more clarity and things are kind of moving along. What can we expect to see from you in the future?
So I was listening to your interview with Eric yesterday, and I thought, this dude's stealing all of my lines. writing a book, I'm working on that too. Nothing nearly as exciting as what Eric is doing, but putting together a couple of ebooks and some packages for companies, a big thing. Again, this goes back to the clarity, you know, understanding who I am and what I have to offer. It's a matter of putting together things like, you know, products and not just services, so that I can give people better use of my time and things like that. And so, yeah, I'm writing a couple of ebooks that I'll be putting out there hopefully within the next month or two. I'm also working to expand a side project, which is kind of writing and communications resources for grad students and postdocs. And I've got some ideas for kind of building that out just to help people who are now in the position that I was in three, four years ago, help them develop and kind of get started earlier. So, yeah. And then I hopefully just, getting out there, you know, buying a high rise in downtown Nashville and filling it up with employees.
Sounds super cool. All right. Well, where can people find you in that high? Well, before that high rise, before you get to the high rise, where can people find you now if they want to learn more?
Yes. My website is filamentcommunications.com, and, Filament is on Twitter at @FilamentLifeSci. I'm on Twitter at @DSchifrin. And if anybody ever wants to bounce ideas around, I'm at dschifrin@filamentcommunications.com.
Cool. And you've also got this super cool podcast, Science Writing Radio, right?
I do, yes. So that's on the grad student postdoc resource side of things. That's sciencewritingradio.com, which was also kind of a big win for me. It got to the point where I needed to actually split that off from Filament's main site and give it its own home. So that'll be growing. But yeah, anybody who's interested in hearing me ramble and interview some really cool people can go to sciencewritingradio.com.
Very cool. All right. Well, any parting words of wisdom for entrepreneurs?
Yeah, get started. Quit screwing around. You know, go start a lemonade stand, break things, fail, make a couple bucks here and there, fail some more. Just do it.
I love it. Awesome. All right. Well, I do have this bonus question for you. Are you ready?
We'll find out.
I'm guessing because you're a few years behind on TV, maybe you're a few years behind on movies too. It's okay. It's totally okay though. So deliver a line from a movie that sticks with you and tell us why you chose that movie, that line.
Mm-hmm. It's so hot. Milk was a bad choice. And that is absolutely hands down the greatest line that has ever come out of Hollywood, from the greatest movie ever made. And I'm sorry to Will Ferrell that I can't deliver it anywhere near as well as he did. So Anchorman, I have no clue why that sticks with me, but I quote that all the time. I've been in the middle of the grocery store walking down the dairy aisle and I've shouted that out. It is what it is.
I think we're kindred spirits because I quote lines all the time. I don't know that people get it, but it amuses me, so.
Yeah, it's, I'll have my own fun.
Hey, I think that's a wonderful thing. Thank you so much, David. This has been so much fun, and it's really been great learning about your experiences, and I'm super excited to see about all the stuff that you're going to do in the future.
Thank you so much, Sonia. This has been absolutely a pleasure.
David had lots of cool things to share, but there was one thing that stood out to me in particular. And that brings us to today's I Am the One challenge. It's great to learn from the experiences of others, but you've got to apply those lessons if you want to make them work for you. So based upon David's insights, here's today's challenge question for you. What is it that your business offers? Specifically, what is the value that you bring to the customers that you serve? Having clarity about what you do and how you help your customers will go a long way toward focusing your efforts, as well as helping you communicate about your business. Think about it and then head on over to iamtheone.fm where you'll find episode 26. There you'll see I've prepared a worksheet for you to help you address the challenge question for your business. And once you've got your answer, leave it in the comments on the show notes page or tweet me at Sonia E. Thompson and let me know what it is that you do. Until next time, keep working on building your dream business so you can make life better. Somebody's waiting on you. Thanks for listening.